It's the We Are SC podcast. Gary Paskowitz joined, as always, by Mike Lamb and Jeremy Hogue. And, guys, it's the Holiday Bowl preview edition. USC matched up in this bowl game, a bowl game that the Trojans have never been to, the first-time visit to San Diego. Matched up against the Nebraska Cornhuskers. And when you start to look at this game, and at least as far as the numbers are concerned, there are a lot of similarities between these two football teams. USC with an 8-4 record, Nebraska coming in at 9-3. USC averages 35.1 points a game. Nebraska averages 37. USC gives up 23. Nebraska gives up 24. These are two teams that are going to want to play a physical style of football. So when you look at this matchup and how it might go down, Mike Lamb, I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about how this football game might go.
Well, there's reasons for optimism, and I don't think that it's due in short part to the way that this team played in their last game. So if a team was ascending the way that the Trojans were, you have to be thrilled that they get another opportunity. And so for young players, which USC has a plethora of, and for a coaching staff that's only been together with these guys for a short time, it's an incredible opportunity to go and play in a game against a quality opponent. You're not going to roll your eyes at playing the University of Nebraska, so I think everybody's going to be up for the game and on edge a little bit. So, yeah, it's something that I see these two teams that kind of mirror one another in a certain way, and maybe the advantage is for USC because they don't have an interim coach coaching the game. They have been together a little bit, and I think that the attitude that was pervasive coming out of that Notre Dame victory was players that wanted to play one more game, and that is really a good sign when you're going into one of these bowl games.
And yeah, Jeremy, I would add. Go ahead, Jerry.
I was just going to say, I think what's interesting coming off of the Notre Dame game so quickly is how fast that script did get turned around from where it was after UCLA. How much the emotions change after Notre Dame. Like Mike said, the team and the players do seem to be fired up to play in this bowl game.
Yeah, and to me, when you look at these bowl games, and this is not a slight at all, but if you're not playing in the national championship type game or the college playoff or the Rose Bowl or one of these big games, it's very easy to sort of for the seniors on a team like this or some of the veterans to sort of say, oh, now we got to go to some, El Paso or Las Vegas or some of these minor bowls where we're playing an inferior opponent and sort of let down. And I think two things have sort of happened. One, I think the Holiday Bowl is one of the few sort of, non top-tier bowl games that the Pac-12 is involved in, that is still a great bowl game. And, going to San Diego as opposed to El Paso is fantastic. Going the way the Holiday Bowl is positioned on TV, night game, national television, all that sort of stuff is fantastic. The matchup against, a Big Ten team as opposed to, a Mountain West team is fantastic. There's all those positives that make this a game to look forward to. And at the same time, the way that they came off that Notre Dame game, all the talk, all the talk has been about next year and how does this, come out of the Notre Dame game, like you said, Gary, reclaim the momentum that they lost against UCLA and sort of totally do a 180 in terms of really positioning this team for 2015. And to me, this bowl game, as much as there's some seniors that will be sent off in this game and it'll be their final game and you want to celebrate with them, this game is really about positioning this team for next year and making a statement going into the offseason, going into recruiting, going into spring ball, and even all the expectations over the summer that basically says this team better be one that you look out for in 2015. And if you're a player and that is what you get to do, that's something to get excited about. And to me, that's why as a fan and a former player, I'm thrilled that they're in this type of a game that's really a meaningful one heading into next year.
And I think that the point that you're making with this is to be able to do this with these practices and the benefits that can be gained. Mike, you mentioned earlier, it's almost like a whole new spring ball practice. I think that for this football team with the coaching staff and the players still really trying to feel each other out and learn each other, these bowl practices, when you're getting 14 of them, that is absolutely huge, Mike.
Well, speaking of 14, I have a question for you before I answer your question. How can you have 14 teams and be called the Big Ten? Just something I'd throw out at you guys. I don't understand it, and you guys are smarter than I am. The extra practices are, it's a combination of spring football where you can be very physical at the beginning of it. Maybe your players get a little bit banged up, but you've got time, you know, to let that heal and still be fresh for the bowl game. It's an opportunity to put some things in maybe and work with your team that you wouldn't otherwise get to do. Understand something. When you get into the season, with the exception of having a bye week, you don't have that much time to work on things, to put something new in, because you're always working on a specific game plan for the team that you're going to be playing that week. Now, while there is a component of that that goes on, especially when you're looking at somebody like Nebraska, clearly you've got some time to work on some things, work on some people, and see some situations that you can put some players in. So it's like it's a bonus. It's so great for a staff to do that. And I know Steve Sarkisian was thrilled. And, you know, I have heard you've told me, Gary, that it's been pretty physical at practice from time to time. And I just think that's, you know, a luxury that not a lot of coaches are going to have during the regular season.
I think they're going to need it. I mean, I hate to say this, but I mean, you know, when you look at the Trojans, and as much as they had a great game against Notre Dame, and it's easy to get up and even a little overconfident, I do feel like that's a little bit of the buzz around the program right now is, you know, oh, you know, what happened at UCLA was just a bad game. And look, Notre Dame, that is our true identity, is what happened against Notre Dame. And I think as much as we all want to believe that, there's a little bit of, you know, overstatement of what that Notre Dame
I don't believe it. I don't believe that, Jeremy. I mean, I think you're right on point with this.
I think you're right on point. We just lost Antoine Woods, you know, so there are players that we're going to be losing as we go into next year. I think this team needs every practice it can get. I think it needs to play physical. I think it needs to get ready for a Nebraska team that is going to be coming after our guys. You look at Nebraska, and clearly they didn't play the type of schedule that USC played. The Big Ten is not the Pac-12. But, you know, they lost three games this year to a number 10-ranked Michigan State team, a Wisconsin team that's ranked, a Minnesota team that is ranked. Every other game they won. And, you know, clearly they didn't have any huge, you know, statement wins on their resume. But they went through that schedule and put a pretty good record on the field. They've got some really good players on their offensive line. They've got some really good players in their defensive front. If we don't show up, and I think this has been true of the Trojans all year long, we've talked about it, if we don't show up and really go attack the Cornhuskers, you know, it's easy for USC to sort of have those same results of inconsistency that we've had throughout that season. So for me, those 14 practices, as much as it's about developing the younger talent and getting guys reps and all that stuff, we better also be getting ready to play Nebraska.
And then let's start to break down the Cornhuskers, because I really think, like you say, they're bringing some good football players down here. And I want to start with the running back, Amir Abdullah. When you're the second leading career rusher at Nebraska behind a guy named Mike Rozier, does that get your guys' attention? Because it certainly does mine.
Yeah, it gives my attention. And the one thing about him is I've seen him finish games. You put up 1,500 yards in that conference against that competition. And then the other part, you know, you've gotten in the end zone 18 times. And those are just not numbers to scoff at. And when I think about the Big Ten, I'm always thinking about the fact that has really been geared towards the run for a long, long time. That has been the tradition of that conference. And when you are geared to run the football, what are defenses geared to do? That is to stop you from running. So if there was a kind of a bright spot out of what Nebraska had this year, I thought that was one of them. And then the other part, and I don't want to lose, you know, sight of this. They're working with an interim coach. They lost Bo Pelini to, you know, for whatever reason. And I thought it was kind of curious, coming off the record that they did come off of, that you would make a coaching switch here. So I think in addition to talking about what this team can do physically, I think mentally and psychologically it's kind of an interesting study as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, Gary, I know you and I've talked about it. I mean, this is a little bit of the situation the Trojans were in last year when they went bowling, right? I mean, they they make the coaching change. They've got the new hire. Everyone knows Mike Riley's coming. Last year, everyone knew Steve Sarkisian was coming. But you've got this interim guy who is going to rally the troops and try to get him to go play in a big bowl game against a good opponent. And you know, I'm completely in agreement with Mike. I mean, this is a team that has played some really good football at times this year. Other than that Wisconsin game that was sort of an embarrassing one for them, you know, they were in pretty much every game, barely lost to Michigan State, barely lost to Minnesota. You know, not only is Abdullah a great running back, but their quarterback Armstrong has, you know, I think just under 700 yards rushing, in addition to being able to throw the ball to a couple wide receivers that are pretty good. They've got good special teams, their defensive front. They've got a guy who's Randy Gregory, who's going to be a first-round draft pick on their defensive line. And you know, is our offensive line going to protect Cody Kessler with that guy coming off the end? I mean, all those types of challenges that when you think about the year that USC has had have been things that potentially pose problems for the Trojans if they didn't really come out of the gates totally focused, ready to play physical football. So I think they're going to give us everything they can handle. I think they're going to be motivated to, you know, play for this interim guy and at the same time get ready to impress Mike Riley and you know, show him the type of team that they want to be under his leadership. And, you know, I think we better come ready to play.
When you look at Bo Pelini, guys, seven straight years of 9 wins or more.
Mm-hmm.
Is this what college football's turning into, Mike? That's a pretty strong number you're putting up.
It's almost strong enough to make you go off on a crazed rant about the athletic director like Bo Pelini.
let's be honest here. I mean, Bo Pelini was not fired for wins and losses. As much as, you know,
good
you
point.
Expect, and Nebraska, you know, fired Frank Solich after some really good record as well. You know, but Bo Pelini was fired because of his attitude and his temper and his, you know, a guy like that not fitting in Lincoln, Nebraska, as many chances as they tried to give him. To me, you know, it's the combination of not being in the Big Ten championship game and his years there, combined with, you know, the attitude and the rants and the temper and all that sort of stuff. That's just not a fit. And, you know, it'll be really, really interesting to see what Mike Riley, who's sort of Tom Osborne-like in many ways, ends up doing in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Well, it's interesting to kind of compare and contrast those guys. And, Jeremy, you know Mike Riley. I know Mike Riley, and you couldn't be more different. Mike Riley is one of the most measured guys. You know, his demeanor is one that's just, you know, this, you know, very nice guy. But not to say that he can't coach, because, you know, I've seen him, you know, rise up and go off on players both at USC and at Oregon State. But, you know, to build a little bit on Jeremy's point, that they want to have a certain type of guy at the helm that conducts himself a certain way. And, you know, for Mike, he's going to have to go in there and what do you have to do? You know, the numbers are not going to lie. You're going to have to continue to win. You're going to have to win double-digit games for people to perceive that you're better than Bo Pelini was. And, you know, it was kind of a curious hire to begin with. People thought, really? Mike Riley? And, you know, he's had a lot of success, but not the type of numbers at Oregon State that would dictate in most people's minds that you go to Nebraska. I thought it was kind of curious on Mike's part until I understood that Oregon State has half scholarships. You know, they don't really have the resources that they need to have to really compete at the top of the Pac-12. So it's going to be interesting to see him there.
Yeah, I think Mike is at the point in his career where, and I remember talking to him a couple of years ago, and I think he gave us all the impression that this is a guy that was never going to leave Corvallis.
Right.
And clearly something has changed where, you know, he felt in his mind, and it may just be that unique opportunity at Nebraska that is, you know, it's not the big market, big city that I think he, to be honest with you, is a little opposed to, just from a lifestyle standpoint. I think he likes the small college town atmosphere that Lincoln will give him. But at the same time, I think in his mind, he feels, look, there's a little bit of unfinished business here. And as much as he's had success at Oregon State in terms of taking Oregon State to heights that it really hadn't seen in decades before he got there, you know, it wasn't Rose bowls. It wasn't college football playoffs. It wasn't, you know, conference championships that he was delivering. And really he sort of reached his ceiling. And I think the question really was, could what he brings to a program fit at what is traditionally, you know, a top 10 program in the country in terms of the history and tradition of a place like Nebraska, and can that combination of what he brings to a program like that really compete for a national championship and Big Ten titles and everything that goes with it? And, you know, I don't know that that recipe is going to happen, because I think it's more challenging to do that today than it's ever been before, but certainly I think, you know, it's something that Mike just felt like personally he needed to go attack and see if he could make work. And we'll see. I think he could have stayed in Corvallis for another 8-10 years and rode off into the sunset and they'd have named the stadium after him. And instead, he could end up at Nebraska. And if he does what you're talking about, you know, and doesn't win 10-win games every year, he could be thrown out in the curb in another 3 to 4 years like everybody else and hurt his reputation in the long run. But I think, you know, that's the type of competitor I think he is, that he wants that challenge.
I think this has been one of the most interesting coaching dominoes situations that I can remember. The choices of Mike to Nebraska, like you say, that raised a lot of eyebrows, but I think that is a solid choice. Oregon State rallied about as good as you're going to do if you lose a Mike Riley to bring in a Gary Anderson, and then it sounds like Wisconsin got a guy that they wanted. So you look at this trio of schools, it sounds like everybody kind of made it out okay at the end, Mike.
Yeah, but it was kind of curious because you don't think of Wisconsin as a stepping stone, right?
No.
And you think of, you know, Oregon State, and I think Jeremy's point is right, that Mike Riley was going to be there. You know, the guy went to Corvallis High, and, you know, and his deal was, I think, was every time he was over 500, he got another year on his contract. You know, it was just like those were curious things to have happen. But, you know, when you say dominoes, if you remember last year, you know, kind of the way that it went down, Sark took the SC job, the Washington job came open, right? Chris Peterson goes up there, and nobody really, you know, I mean, that was just kind of a curious thing to see how it happened. And Jim Moore got an extension. So it's just, it is interesting every year to see how this stuff goes down, not to mention, you know, what's going on with the Michigan job right now. So it's interesting that what a tempest it is in the Big Ten right now with the coaching carousel.
Yeah, those dominoes have not, you know, at least for the 2014 offseason, have not finished falling, right? There's
going
to be some new ones to be played, and there'll be some other things that turn our heads between now and January.
And another thing that I want to talk really quick about, the early entry decisions of some of these Trojan players that are be coming up. Obviously, Leonard Williams, Buck Allen, Nelson Aguilar. But the one guy who has made a decision already, and Max Turk deciding to stay, we really think that's so huge in what's going on here to come back and settle up that offensive line. Jeremy, start up with you and your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it's absolutely, you know, vital. And, you know, you think, you know, there's a guy named Marcus Martin who's starting right now for the 49ers, and you know, he could be a senior at USC right now, and if he had stayed and Max Turk were playing, you know, left tackle, for instance, when Wheeler got hurt, and, you know, all those sort of dominoes, you know, we talk about dominoes, the dominoes that fall from those type of decisions, you know, I think this USC team this year, 2014, would be a much different team. Well, you know, you can't, it was the right decision for Marcus Martin. He's off to the great start for his career for whatever reason, and I won't speak to his readiness or not. You know, Max Turk decided, I'm coming back, and what that means for this offensive line that's already young and inexperienced and trying to sort of continue to grow is just, you know, couldn't be a better sign for probably the most important unit on this team. And I think we saw that in terms of when they played weak, what it means to this team, and when they play strong, what it means to this team. And for him coming back and to really anchor that line going into 2015, to me, the most important decision made so far by any of these guys.
Mike, let me ask you really quick. On the All-Pac-12 team, I thought it was wonderful for Max to be named the first-team center. You had a pretty good guy up at Oregon in Grasso who got injured by the end of the year. But in Max's first year at center, did that raise your eyebrows a little bit in a good way to see him named first-team All-Pac-12?
Kind of surprising. I thought he played, you know, well, but I didn't think that, you know, he set the world on fire. But, you know, maybe that's a byproduct of having played on that offensive line. As I don't know what that must have been like. You know, you got a freshman on each side of you. I just don't. because it takes a long time for, you know, everybody to get on the same page. But I think it goes to the point where, yeah, that's nice. And it's nice to get some recognition, but I didn't think he was ready for the NFL. And I'll give you, you know, a couple of points where I don't know where guys get that voice of reason when it comes to it, because agents are going to tell people, and your girlfriend's going to tell you, and your uncle's going to tell you how great you are. You know, where do you get the football knowledge and somebody to really tell you what's going on? You look at the coaches around you, like, well, you know, they've got a vested interest in you staying and right. sticking around. There were some guys last year that made a mistake by coming out, right? You know, I mean, sure. that's, you know, and it's usually the exception if you're going to get done to it. Most people don't understand, you know, what it's like to go to the NFL. They think, I'm good in college and I'm going to go there. It's weird. I mean, it's just such a minute top to the pyramid of talent, and it's so hard to make it done. I think the extra year helps you. I don't think it can hurt you, unless, you know, of course, you're going to be like a number one pick, and financially you just can't walk away from it. If you're a top 10 pick, well, then clearly you got to get out, but I don't think Max is going to be a top 10 pick, so I think he made the right choice.
Well, let's talk about a guy who is projected to be a top 10 pick right now, and that's Leonard Williams. I'll say this, guys, in talking to Leonard and watching him for 3 years, I have no doubt in my mind that this is a guy who is truly enjoying his college experience. He would love to stay at USC for another year. I don't think there's any question about that. He's having a great time. Like you said, Mike, can he turn that down? If you're going to be there, you hear the conflict in him right now. He wants to stay, but Jeremy, can he?
No. There's no. I hate to say it, but you know, this is not Keyshawn Johnson coming back for his senior year, who's a big physical wide receiver and has never been hurt and sort of is getting hit by 180-pound DBs. This is Leonard Williams, who has already sort of battled injuries and had shoulder issues and other things at the college level. And, you know, it's his time. You know, he's at the top of the college game. You know, could he be better? Yeah, but he's not going to improve his draft stock by coming back and being a little bit more dominant in his senior year. And as fun as that might be, and as much is it's awesome for us as fans to say, gosh, it's great to see a guy, you know, enjoy himself at USC and love being part of the Trojans as much as we all loved being part of the Trojans. You know, it's the wrong decision. He's got to look out for his career and his earning potential and all those things that everyone else does, even that isn't playing football. You got to position yourself for the rest of your life, and it's going to be his time. I would be absolutely floored if at some point, you know, wiser heads don't prevail and he ends up announcing.
It would be a mistake for him not to go out. It's time. He's proved everything that he can in college football. I think there's really only a downside for him personally. And so there has to be a line of delineation here. You know, what is good for you as a player, and then what's good for your team and all that. And we selfishly would love to see him stay. But then there's the other part of me that looks in and says, you know, if I was your advisor, it would, you know, that way we did the Benjamin Franklin with the pros and the cons. It would be all pro that he goes pro.
And let's talk really quick without the other guys who are going to have those decisions. Just give your quick thoughts on Nelson Aguilar, Buck Allen, Cody Kessler's name being tossed about. How do you see those breakout, Jeremy?
I think, let's start with Cody. I think probably the most important decision in this class is going to be what happens with Cody Kessler. And I think he's already given significant leanings that he wants to come back. I think Cody's fantastic. I have talked to a couple guys that I trust that do a lot of work with NFL quarterbacks and prepping them and getting guys ready. And they think he should come back simply because, you know, he improved so much over the course of the season in terms of, you know, how he was throwing the deep ball in the second half of the season, some of his accuracy, moving in the pocket, different things. But, you know, for him to be able to play a little more consistently behind an offensive line that's a little bit more mature than what he had throughout the course of the season, I think is needed for Cody to potentially emerge as and significantly improve his draft stock from being sort of a middle-round guy to a guy that could really emerge as being an elite quarterback that's you know, potential first rounder next year. So I'm hopeful Cody comes back. you know, for a guy like Buck Allen, you know, to me, running backs, I think you see it in the NFL all the time, are not nearly as valued as they were when they were being drafted, you know, very, very early back in the 90s. You know, that's not as much what happens anymore, but there also seems to be this shelf life mentality in terms of how long are these, you know, how many carries can a running back really get over the course of his career? And I think guys have to think about that. I know John Jackson talks about that a lot, and you know, at some point starting that NFL career where you're getting paid for that number of carries that your body can really take, you know, comes into effect, even if you are a mid-round draft pick or whatever it might be. So I'm sure he'll be thinking about that, but you know, I selfishly hope he comes back, but you know, that one to me is a little bit of a toss-up because I know where he came from and the financial situation that he and his family and everything have come from. It may weigh on him and impact him. Nelson Agholor, I think, is a toss-up to me. I think he is unbelievably good and talented. I don't know what another year playing for USC sort of does for him in terms of showing him to be a better wide receiver than he's already shown. My real question would be, where is he projected to go? I don't know that right now, but I think he's got to do that evaluation and make his own decision. I think, fortunately for the Trojans, if there's a position where we've got some depth, I think it's quickly emerging to be that wide receiver core.
So I'll do it in reverse order, and I will start with Nelson. And I don't know what else he has to prove. The guy's got almost 100 receptions, 1,200 yards receiving, 11 touchdowns, and those are the numbers that validate what we saw with our eyes. He had some monstrous games for the Trojans, and he's proven to me, and I think he's probably proven to everybody that is going to watch that, you know, the coach's prerogative to watch the way guys play, that he's clearly ready to get it done. So I think that's a guy that's in NFL ready, and if he wants to stand of the year, great, but, you know, he'd be bonusing us on that deal. Buck Allen, I'm probably going to reiterate some of the things that Jeremy said, that as a running back, you know, you're going to go to the National Football League, and now it's such a quarterback-driven league that, you know, you better be able to pass block. That's your deal. You got to understand protection, go to the right place and be able to protect the quarterback, and then you'll be of some value. I mean, there's just not, you know, not those many teams that are just going to hand it off and get it done. There is Marshawn Lynch, and there are some guys that, you know, you want to try to utilize in that fashion, but it's becoming the exception. So I think another year would be good for him as a player, and I don't think it would hurt him. I think it would help him. And as far as Cody Kessler, he could go and play in the National Football League right now. I've made this point before, so I'm going to make it again. If you remember the day Mark Sanchez announced that he was going to go to the NFL, what did Pete say? What, you started 16 games in college? And I think Pete, you know, wore out the numbers, you know, what happened to players that did not play a lot of games in college football and then tried to take their craft to the National Football League. It just didn't work out so well. It's invaluable for Cody to come back and have another year, all those more games, and who knows what he can do. I mean, the way he played this year, it's insane, the numbers. You know, Gary, you've talked about this. I've talked about this. You put up 36 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. That's – I mean, who else is doing that? It was phenomenal. So another year with Sark – and another year playing in the Pac-12, understanding that, who are they going to talk about next year as far as quarterbacks? The Heisman Trophy winner's gone. Brett Hundley's gone. Who's going to be the guy they're going to talk about?
Big-time spotlight. Yep. Big-time spotlight. Okay, let's wrap up this podcast by talking about a nice honor last week for a former Trojan, Jeremy, one of your teammates, and that was Tony Boselli being inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. And, Mike, why don't you get you started on the thoughts really quick, and then we'll let Jeremy talk about his teammate. But as a former offensive tackle, just give your thoughts on Tony Boselli.
Yeah, he was a special guy, and there was really a long line of tackles that had played. You know, you think about Ron Yeary and then Anthony Munoz, and then I think about Tony and John Michaels, and when they were together, guys that really fit into that mold. And for Tony, I've always, and this is terrible to say, but I always wonder to myself what could have been. You know, if he would have physically held up, what could have been with him? But that's the National Football League. You're talking about an honor for college. He was a tremendous player for USC, and the fact that if you can be mentioned in the same breath with the other guys that I, you know, kind of compared him to, yeah, you know, that works out pretty good. That's a pretty good resume booster.
I could, Gary, as you know, I could talk about Tony for a long time. It was of all the guys I played with, and I played with some pretty big names. A lot of us that play at USC, you know, we were honored to play with guys that are legendary type guys, and whether it's the Keyshawn Johnsons and the Willie McGinnis and the Curtis Conways and the Johnny Mortons and all, you know, all the guys that have sort of, you know, were teammates of mine that I saw how they worked, not only on the field but off the field and in the film room and in the weight room, and their work ethic and their attitude, you know, to me, Tony Boselli was in a class by himself, and he's a guy that I, you know, to this day consider a great friend. But beyond that, it was really something special for me to play on his team and watch him sort of hone his craft and then take it to the next level. I agree with Mike. I mean, you think about what he could have been had the shoulders held up, had the hips held up. This is a guy that went to the NFL and was a first-team All-Pro as a rookie and was a two-time NFL lineman of the year in his brief little eight-year career. He was as dominant of a lineman in the NFL as any lineman in that game during his brief 8 years, and certainly at USC was a special guy. I would say this in closing, and if you hear me talk enough, or if you've read some of the things, Gary, that I've written on your site over the years, you know, to me there's a difference between being talented, being good, having good feet, all the technical things that work, and also having an attitude. And to me, the one thing that sort of separated Tony was, and I say this in the most complimentary of ways, at the end of the day on the field, he was a mean guy, and a mean guy in a good way, and he enjoyed the physical aspects of football and, you know, punishing guys that dared line up across from him, both in the run game and the pass game, and it made him a very unique, special player. And, you know, I got to watch him go against Willie McGinnis for 3 years every day in practice, two guys that were pretty much as good as it gets, and then watched him go on and, you know, do it on Saturdays and then do it in the NFL. And funny enough, I was with someone that Mike mentioned. I was with Ron Yeary on Sunday night at the Lott Impact Trophy, and Ron and I were talking a little bit about football and linemen, and Ron made that same comment about his own son, and who's an up-and-coming high school, about to be a high school football player, who's got great size and athleticism, and he looked at me and said, "You know what, Jeremy, one of the things I really like, he's also a mean kid." and he said, "You know what I mean." And I said, "I know what you mean." And he doesn't mean he's mean off the field, but when you put those pads on him and he plays, he knows how to be a mean guy on the field. And at the end of the day, that was Tony. And it's kudos that he's in the College Hall of Fame. It's he was one of the all-time great Trojans.
And I know over the years, Jeremy, you mentioned the words that you've written and you've talked about, and that is the thing that is always consistent when I've heard you talk about other players, I've heard you talk about teammates. There's always been just that little bit different when you talk about Boselli, and what an up close look that have been to watch him go. That's great. So good podcast, guys. We'll look forward to the Trojans taking on the Nebraska Cornhuskers on December 27th, and we will return on January 6th for our season wrap up edition. For Mike Lamb and Jeremy Hogue, this is Gary Pasquitz. You're listening to the We Are SC podcast.